This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
Do you find yourself changing the way you speak over time? Maybe you move towns and start talking differently. Maybe you're influenced by how people sound on social media, or like you join a friend group with a pretty distinct way of speaking. Because Australian slang is changing, in particular two very important parts of our vernacular, swearing and insults. It's Angel Parsons with you for Hack today. I'm filling in for Dave Marchese. And later on in the show, we're finding out how younger generations are changing the sound of Australia.
Yeah, I like wombat because you're a bit silly.
Calling someone a galah?
Probably say bloody hell.
Putrid dog gets thrown around a fair bit.
We definitely call girls gangers and guys gronks.
I'd love to know if there are certain phrases or insults you use where you are. You can text in on 0439 757 555. Do you think old slang is making a comeback, or are we sounding maybe more and more American? We'll be finding out how and why swearing in Australia is changing and what it means for our cultural identity. Also coming up, what it's like living through the worst mouse plague in years. Parts of South Australia, Western Australia, and New South Wales are being invaded. I'm talking mice in beds, destroying crops and machinery, and rotting in the streets. Why is this happening, and what's the solution? All that coming up, but first, a heads up, we're going to be talking about domestic and family violence.
Hack.
Inside an unremarkable family home, the unthinkable.
On Triple J.
Are we doing enough to prevent family and domestic violence? For so many people, the answer is painfully clear, and it's no. Within the last week across Australia, at least four women and two children have been murdered in what police believe are domestic violence incidents. In the wake of the tragedies, there's been renewed calls for a national royal commission into violence against women. But is that the answer? And we keep hearing about the government's federal budget handed down last week. We'll find out if advocates for women's safety wanted a bit more. We'll speak to the Women's Legal Service soon, get their take on what needs to happen here. Just a heads up, for the next 10 minutes, we will be discussing family and domestic violence. Reporter Jackson Worthington has the latest.
In the past week, police around Australia have found themselves responding to a number of what is believed to be family and domestic violence-related tragedies. On Thursday last week in Canberra, a 79-year-old woman was found dead in her home. Her son, a 51-year-old man, has been charged with her murder. A day later, a woman in Tasmania was murdered in what police believe to be a murder-suicide.
The scene was extremely frightening to all the emergency services that attended the scene, and the images that they saw inside that residence will remain with them for their time.
And on Sunday, the Tasmanian police found the body of another woman. She was in her 60s and they believe she'd been dead for several weeks. A man in his 50s has been charged with murder in relation to her death. The next day, nearly 1,000 kilometres north, New South Wales police found a woman in her 40s and her two sons dead in their home in Campbelltown.
Whilst I can't give you specific information regards to how they passed, what I can tell you is all three persons sustained significant injuries and it was a particularly violent crime scene.
A 47-year-old man related to the family has been charged with their murder. The ABC understands police have been told the man was a full-time carer for his two sons. He faced court yesterday but did not appear in person and did not apply for bail. Outside court, his lawyer told reporters he was distressed.
It's obviously a tragic set of circumstances.
The deaths in New South Wales come after a police blitz targeting family and domestic violence offenders. Nearly 1,000 people were charged in a four-day crackdown.
The message isn't getting through. This is a stain on society. It's a scourge. And it's something that the New South Wales police force won't take a backward step on.
The man charged in relation to the triple murder in Sydney was not known to police. This latest spate of deaths has prompted fresh calls for a royal commission into violence against women. According to Counting Dead Women, a project designed to track the names of women killed by violence in Australia, 21 women have already been killed this year. A separate advocacy group, the Australian Femicide Watch, launched a petition calling for a royal commission into the killing of Australian women and girls in January. It's already gained more than 96,000 signatures. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has so far rejected calls for a royal commission.
We've seen four deaths in now 4 days of women, and we were yet to hear anything, any government official, especially yourself, Prime Minister, talk about it. I know that there is a call for a royal commission into the deaths of women. There's 90,000 signatures so far. What does your government feel about that? Will we see this royal commission?
Look, there's calls for a royal commission about everything.
Well, you've I think deaths of women are pretty paramount, wouldn't
yeah,
you say?
Yeah, there are, but you've got to work out what does a royal commission do besides fund lawyers?
He told Hobart commercial radio host Christy Hayes the government is throwing everything at this issue.
We know what's required here. We know that there's too much violence against women. We know what keeps women in these relationships. We know what's required in terms of the economic support to get out. We know there's a need for more alternative housing. We know there's a need for more counselling and for community workers. And we need to get on with action.
Hack on Triple J.
Jackson Worthington reporting there, and I do want to say if that story has raised any issues for you, if you need to talk to someone, you can call 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732. Lifeline is also there on 13 11 14. On the text line, someone says, does anyone even know what a royal commission does? That's someone's question there, and we are going to keep drilling into this. You know, does Australia need a royal commission into domestic violence? What do some solutions look like here? And we're going to speak now to someone who runs a frontline service trying to improve women's safety. Eleanor Rosenman is the chair of Women's Legal Services Australia and the CEO of Women's Legal Centre in the ACT. She joins us now. Eleanor, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thanks so much for having me on, Angel.
Eleanor, do you think the government is taking this issue seriously enough?
Look, I think what we can understand from the stories that you've just shared with us is that our systems really don't seem to see violence until it actually becomes a body count. What we've seen in the last week is not a string of bad luck. It is the system failing women and their children time and time again. And while we are continuing to listen to stories like this, I think we can agree that the Australian government, and in fact no government across Australia, is taking this issue seriously enough. And I guess from, you know, my position running a frontline service and being certainly in contact with my colleagues who run specialist frontline services across the country, we have never actually tried funding the service system at an adequate level to meet the need. What we're seeing is the escalating need and the complexity of the situations that people find themselves in combination with the diminishing resources that are actually available to frontline services like women's legal services, crisis telephone lines, emergency accommodation, counselling, all of those sorts of services. It means that they're actually forced to triage their services tighter and tighter and tighter, which means that people have to be in more and more difficult situation to actually get help. If I think about an example here in the service that I run, it used to be the case 5 and 10 years ago that our family law practice provided a lot of assistance to women, trans and gender diverse people affected by family violence, but it also provided assistance to people that weren't affected by violence. The situation that we have now is that because the service sector is in this squeezed position, people who aren't in crisis can't get help until they are. And so we just keep building this snowball.
You're talking a lot there about funding, which I am really keen to hear more about. But First, I just want to raise this idea of a royal commission, which, you know, there are growing calls for it as we talk more and more about this at the moment. I understand two states have already held a state-based royal commission into family violence. I mean, you know, there's a petition at the moment with more than 95,000 signatures calling for a national royal commission into this. Do you think there should be a royal commission into violence against women?
One of the things that the Prime Minister said in his response to this question was to ask, what does a royal commission do besides fund lawyers? Which sort of stuck with me, because in fact, if there was a lot of funding for lawyers to assist people supported affected by domestic and family violence, that would actually be part of the proper response to this issue. I think, you know, he has raised this issue that Australia already knows what works to prevent and respond to domestic and family violence. And I think we probably also agree that what is missing is the action that actually matches the rhetoric. What I would observe is that women's safety improves when political will, funding and accountability align. And, you know, as we've seen this week, lives are really depending on that choice. We're seeing the disconnect between the rhetoric and the frontline service funding every day. There are differing views on whether or not a royal commission would provide the motivation that government needs to invest in this properly. If the Prime Minister is saying that's not what's required for that motivation to occur, then what we need to see is the action that actually matches that statement.
The federal budget was announced last week, and I guess one of its main measures that we've been talking about for domestic and family violence was around making the child support system better. I mean, what did you make of the budget? Did you feel there is enough money going to women's safety?
Women's legal services across this country welcomed those reforms as really a historical acknowledgement that government systems and institutions are used to perpetrate ongoing domestic family violence and coercive control, particularly post-separation, and most importantly, that governments can actually act to change that, and that those changes are really important, that everyday systems are being weaponized exactly as it says, every day to perpetrate this kind of harm. What I would observe is that this is a good first step, but even in relation to single parent households, there is more to do to ensure that that these households are not living in preventable poverty, and there are more steps that Women's Legal Services would recommend. We are a long way from having a really truly nuanced gendered understanding of safety issues in this country, and I think that the allocation of funding to the defence budget versus the allocation of funding to measures like the child support reform really show us that we haven't grappled in a financial sense with the scale of those differing safety risks for people in Australia. You can't declare a national crisis and then moderate and budget for a small to moderate problem. There are real commitments in the budget, but again, I think we're a long way from having resourced this system to actually respond to the need that we see. There are 1,000 women being turned away from women's legal services across Australia every week, and nothing in the budget that we saw last week will change that.
What are some examples of solutions here?
Well, I think the thing that we need to do to respond to this problem is to resource the system as a whole. My day-to-day job shows me that there is not enough resourcing in the system for legal advice. But we also work as part of a system, and so I would say, you know, we can't operate here in Canberra without the 24-hour domestic violence crisis service, without the emergency accommodation, without the long-term counselling and support that lots of other organisations provide. So I think funding the frontline service system is really critical. We also see delays in justice responses from poorly resourced court and justice systems. And I think the thing that we all care about is also around, you know, prevention and actually making sure that children and young people are actually getting the information they need when they need it in a way that makes sense to them to help them build strong, healthy relationships.
It's such a complex issue, but one we do need to keep talking about. We really appreciate your insights into it all. Eleanor Rosenman, thank you so much for sharing your time with HAQ today.
Thanks for your time, Angel.
And I do just want to say again, if you need to talk to someone, you can call 1-800-RESPECT on 737 732. That's 737 732. And Lifeline is also there on 13 11 14. Hearing from you on the text line on this one, predominantly about whether or not we should be having a Royal Commission on this, someone saying, I agree with the PM. What would a Royal Commission tell us that we don't already know? They cost so much money and take multiple years. is. Someone else, though, on the text line is saying the Prime Minister is failing to mention any behavioural change strategies targeted at boys and men to deter violence against women and children in the first place. Suggests that enforcing government initiatives do not understand the path to end domestic violence. More support for women to leave does not prevent the killing of women and children in the first place, is that person's text there. For now, we are going to move on.
Hack.
Scurrying from silos as they infest farms in Western Australia's wheat belt. Similar scenes in South Australia, where millions of mice are on the march.
On Triple J.
Yeah, can you imagine what it would be like to live through a mouse plague? Because that's what's happening right now in parts of the country. Stories of mice hiding in beds, biting fingers, chewing machinery wiring, destroying grain crops, rotting in the streets. So what's behind this mice plague that we're seeing, and is the end in sight? How can we fix it? Reporter Alice Angeloni has been looking into it.
They're in your house, they're in your bed, they're in your gutters, your water tanks.
Picture your worst nightmare, because 25-year-old farmer Nell might just be living it.
It's just been so gross, really. There's so many mice everywhere. Like, you come home from work at night, there's like six just sitting on your doorstep. You got to put your boots on in the morning, there's mice in your boots. Like, they're in your jacket pockets.
Nell farms at Yuna, about 500 kilometres north of Perth in Western Australia's Midwest. And for months now, Nell has been living through a mice plague that's impacting grain regions in both WA and South Australia.
Australian farmers are battling an explosion in the rodent population, with properties overrun by thousands of mice.
There's always mice around the farms. It's just a part of living rurally. But this plague's probably started in November last year and hit its peak about March.
And while Nell has gone to great lengths to mice-proof her home,
like with expanding foam, it was a big one, put that almost everywhere. I even taped up all my EVAP aircon vents.
She reckons it's been an uphill battle.
And yeah, they still got in though.
But this week, there's been some good news, with Australia's chemical regulator approving an emergency permit for double-strength mouse baits to be used in grain paddocks. But farmers and these rural communities have criticised why it took so long.
We've sent so much data into the APVMA showing them the destruction of them, like the conditions we're living in. Just seems like there was just no hurry from them. But yeah, they're not the ones living here, and they're not the ones having their crops taken or having to live with 50 million mice every day.
So how did we get here?
Why is there a mice plague? So here in the Midwest, we've had a bit of a perfect storm for mice.
Nick McKenna is an agronomist and says they've had perfect conditions for mice, including record grain harvests.
2 wet years in a row, 2 dry summers in a row, and then because they're wet years with big production, there's lots of stubble around as well, which is like the leftover stalks and stuff from the crop that's grown. That means it's a great habitat for mice to live in. They can sort of get shelter from predators, it's protection from the elements, and because it's all there in the paddock along with the spilt grain, it's a great place to raise kids.
Those kids Nick's talking about, there's lots of them, and they multiply quickly. Mice can breed at 6 weeks old and give birth to a litter of up to 10 offspring every 20 days.
This is too much.
And farmers are not the only ones being impacted.
I live in town. I thought I was safe from this mouse plague. I am not.
Mice have been wreaking havoc on homes and businesses too, dying mice littering the main street of the WA town of Morawa.
We have mice in our cars, they're in our sheds, they're in our paddocks, they're at the school.
Karen Chappell is the Morawa Shire president.
You've got bubble wrap and you pop the bubble? That's what it's like. You're driving over mice.
With locals concerned over the health impacts of the rotting carcasses too.
They're in water tanks. You know, you've got to check your water source. They're getting into your cereal boxes, you name it.
The WA government says it's responding.
We are going to be providing some funds to those local governments who are experiencing severe mouse plagues to provide baits or traps or indeed help with the cleanup.
So when is all this expected to end?
I'm hoping as everyone finishes seeding that the mice numbers will start to drop, but it's still pretty hot up here.
Well, a few factors, including food shortages, disease and cold weather, usually reduce mice numbers, with farmers like Nell looking forward to the arrival of those double-strength baits too.
It'll take them a week or two to manufacture it, and then by the time it gets to us, it'll be another 2 to 3 weeks away. But then after that, hopefully we'll start to see numbers really drop.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J.
Alice Angeloni reporting there. And on the text line, someone says, can mice please learn about contraception? Well, there's an idea. Now, earlier you heard about the chemical regulator for the ag sector, which is the Australian Pesticides and Veterinary Medicines Authority, how they've approved a stronger poison. I just want to add, the authority says that was done in line with strong safety and environmental standards and was done based on an evidence-based assessment. All right. Time to move on.
This is Hack.
You could go anywhere else in the world, but Australia would be the only place where you find people swearing at each other as normal.
On Triple J.
Okay, a bit of a content warning here. The next story contains some colourful language that may offend some people. We are literally talking about your favourite Australian insults and swear words because we're understanding more and more about how they change over time and even can cycle back. Like, I'm wondering, was there something you thought was cringe 5 years ago but you use all the time now, or maybe something from your parents' generation? I'm talking slay, I'm talking YOLO, I'm talking sandwich short of a picnic. Text in on 0439 757 555. I'd love to know what your go-to insults are. Please keep it pretty above board. On the text line already, Roy in Campbelltown says, we're not here to F spiders is a favourite slang of mine. That's great, Roy. Over in the UK, a university is mapping a lot of the swear words that are used. And it's doing that as a way of kind of keeping their unique culture alive. So we've been wondering, what about here in Australia? What does the way we swear say about us? Hack hit the streets to find out. Shalila Medora has this story. And again, a language warning on this one.
When it comes to swear words or insults, we've each got our own flavour.
Look, hon, I got to stick with the old favourite. I got to stick with the good old bugger. Fuck's sake.
I think calling someone a galah is one of the top tier ones. You know, it's like Australian, it's native, and it is loud and annoying.
Dingbat's
a good one.
Drongo.
Drongo is Australian as well.
Fuck. Isn't it so liberating just to say it?
A lot of our favourite swear words or insults come from where we grew up and our cultural heritage.
In Cootamundra, putrid dog gets thrown around a fair bit. You putrid dog.
Malaka. It's been an age-old swear word used from the Greeks of old, and once you probably get over 35, you have a right to passage to use it in front of your grandparents and parents.
I grew up in Nowra, and a word that was thrown around a lot in high school was 12-y, and occasionally I'll throw it around. Calling someone who's 28 a 12-y is always funny.
Okay, growing up in Tassie, you're rummin. That means, like, you're scallywag or, like, you're a bit silly.
Whenever my siblings used to piss me off as a kid, it would be just sucks to suck, and it would really get them annoyed.
I'm from far north Queensland, and we definitely call girls gangers and guys gronks.
But are we at risk of losing some of the words that make us uniquely Aussie?
Ear slut! Fuck my life!
Come on, give us a biscuit, you fucking tight ass!
If it's like other parts of language, then yes, it's likely that certain words and certain phrases will go out of fashion slowly as people get older. As those people die, those phrases will disappear.
Linguists in the UK have started mapping regional swear words to keep a sort of database of insults. They're calling it a linguistic census of everyday swearing.
The aim of the project to put together an exhibition that would tour the country, looking at local swear words and phrases, including an interactive map that you can push buttons on and they'll swear back at you.
Dr. Chris Montgomery from the University of Sheffield is running the project.
So swearing is an unfiltered use of language. It's really expressive. It's a really honest part of language. And what we're thinking is it could be where regional identity really comes through.
Australia doesn't have as much regional variation as the UK.
We're particularly interested in these sort of hyper-local expressions that outsiders really aren't going to recognise. So we're really interested in words and phrases that really make sense based on where somebody's from and wouldn't make sense elsewhere.
But Chris says the generational differences in the two places is the same.
Older people might find certain words just simply more offensive than some younger people. And likewise, you know, there might be some terms that are used by older people that young people find particularly offensive in relation to minoritised groups, for example.
The Linguistic Census Project has only just started, and Chris says they're already seeing a bunch of creative responses that tell us how language is evolving.
What we see is this sort of creativity with language, so the recycling of certain popular terms, frequent terms, and yes, maybe some more obscure terms sort of fading out of the language, but in their place, more terms being created, more creative uses being seen.
Hack on Triple J.
Shalila Medora reporting there, and hearing from you on the text line, someone says, I'm a linguist and this has always been happening everywhere, always has been. It's often boiling down to younger people rebelling against the older generation. Anna from Naam says, we used to say Raz in high school in Victoria. Now it's all about Riz. Interesting. Whatever floats your boat. Another good one there. Someone else says, my dad has always called someone who he thought was a bit of an idiot a dipstick. Yeah, a classic. And look, I'm interested to know, I guess, what's being done in Australia to look at the evolution of these kinds of words and phrases and insults. Keep letting me know your faves. You can text in 0439 757 555. We're going to talk more about this now with Dylan Hughes. Dylan is a PhD student at the School of Languages, Literatures, Cultures and Linguistics at Monash University. Dylan, welcome to Hack.
Hi, nice to be here.
We've just been hearing about the evolution of language in Australia, how we change our language over time. Dylan, what are some of the big things that you find that can influence our swearing or our slang here in Australia and how it changes?
Yeah, well, I guess like a big thing is obviously the changing taboos over time. A lot, if we go back several decades, you know, blasphemous expressions were a lot more common, and these days there's been sort of a shift where those kind of expressions are not really seen as offensive anymore, and it's more things like slurs targeting minority groups and that sort of thing.
Does stuff like social media and music play a big role?
I think so, yeah. Social media definitely is a big source of new slang expressions in general, so not just swear words or insults. And music is sort of goes alongside that. You have a lot of American terms might come through, and also British terms actually, through various forms of rap music.
Mm-hmm.
That then gets spread on social media. So it's kind of, they kind of interact together, but definitely.
In your thesis, you talk about this thing called the funny cycle, where words kind of come in and out of use. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, okay. So the funny cycle is this idea that people will hear a new phrase, maybe from like the kids that aren't cool in school, if you sort of want to think about it with sort of like in a school context. And so, but then they might, as a joke, start using those expressions ironically. But soon enough, that irony kind of wears thin and suddenly you find you're just using it yourself. And we get this cycle where words may fall out of fashion, become cringe, seen as not cool in some way. And then over time, people start adopting it ironically again. And then it kind of brings, like, gives it a second life.
Is that like stuff like slay?
Slay, yeah, slay definitely is one which spreads, I think, to a large extent through this kind of ironic use. Another one that's sort of more recently, something like 6-7, is really, irony is what's driving the spread of that, and older people will actually joke about it almost just as much as young people now, because they know it's a thing that young people do, and that's that irony that's sort of coming into play.
Look forward to the day where 6-7 is not used in an ironic way. Look, we've just got to wrap up soon, Dylan, but I'm also wondering, you know, in the UK, certain words can be traced to towns. Is it like that in Australia? Can regional differences be that noticeable or not so much?
I don't think so. At least I don't think anyone's really done the work that they're trying to do to kind of unpack that, but I'm not really aware of anything particular. killer that in the realm of insults and swearing.
Mm-hmm. Dylan, on the text line, we've got so many examples coming in. Someone says, shits me up the wall, always gets a crazy reaction from Americans. That's a pretty interesting point, I guess, when you're going overseas and you're using some of this language. Oh my gosh, someone else has said, my favourite has always been twat waffle. No idea what it means or how offensive it is, but I love it. Look, that's a really interesting one, and yeah, what a way to end it. Dylan Hughes, we really appreciate you coming in to talk with us on Hack. Thanks so much for your time.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
And look, that is all we have time for on Hack today.